Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Last week, a big step was made towards raising the curtain on Broadway when Governor Cuomo announced that theaters could begin selling tickets at full capacity starting May 19th for an anticipated fall season. The news came as a surprise to both theater fans and professionals and was met with confusion and some concern for how this plan would actually be put into effect. But there was also, of course, celebration. A video on TikTok taken Sunday showed people cheering on the cast of the show Come From Away as they returned to rehearsals at the Gerald Schoenfeld Theater. And just this morning, opening dates were announced for three of Broadway's biggest hits, Hamilton, Wicked, and The Lion King. Reopening presents a litany of challenges for productions big and small. In any given year, the average production already runs on razor-thin margins. And after a particularly difficult year reckoning with inequity in the theater world, from racial inequality, financial inaccessibility, and toxic behavior backstage, what will theater look like when it returns? Vulture theater critic Helen Shaw joins us now to discuss the latest on what theater-goers might expect come this fall. Helen, I'm so happy to speak with you.
It's so great to talk to you again after a year and a half.
Listeners, we want you to join this conversation too. Are you planning your first trip back to the theater? Have you bought tickets already? What's the first show you're hoping to see? What hesitations do you have about theaters reopening at full capacity? Give us a call, 646-435-7280. You can join the conversation, 646-435-7280. You can also tweet to us, at @allofitwnyc, or send us a DM on Instagram. That's the same handle, at @allofitwnyc. So Helen, what did you hear from theater professionals after Cuomo's initial reopening announcement?
Well, the first thing I heard was sort of disbelief because they hadn't been consulted. It seemed to come out of left field a bit. It also seemed as though it might be a useful announcement at a useful time as opposed to something that was tied to reality. Because obviously Broadway can't come back until it can be at 100% capacity, and that's going to be the fall. So the May date seemed a little fictional to some folks. On the other hand, it was met with just a great outcry of joy from those people who have wanted some hint, some crocus of spring, that we would have a theater on the other side of this. So I think a mixed response would be the right way to put it.
Yeah, the announcement was made with little guidance as to how theaters should reopen with regards to social distancing or vaccinations for crew, audience members. Let's talk about logistics first. How are theaters considering the logistics of reopening safely?
Well, some of them have been doing sort of hardware overhauls during the shutdown. So, for instance, the Jujamson theaters have been, you know, overhauling their HVAC systems, as have almost every theater in the city, really, have been trying to think about airflow. So some of it has been, you know, what does the actual physical structure look like? There's also been a lot of progress on things like contactless ticketing and contactless entry. It doesn't sound like we're going to be living in the world of paper programs for a while. And so some of it has been practical in that way. I think, though, that what I think all of us hope has been happening behind the scenes have been sort of deeper, more profound conversations about how to come back better as opposed to coming back the same. And I think there's a little bit of evidence that that's been happening.
Now, according to the Daily Beast, the president of the Broadway League mentioned mandating vaccinations for both workers and audiences as a possibility. What have you heard about that?
So legally, that is not really possible, is what I've been hearing. Not that you cannot tell your own employees, for instance, that you have to be, you must be vaccinated. I teach at a university, for instance, and I know that I'm going to be vaccinated, or else I won't be allowed back on campus. But the question of whether or not you can do that for an entire audience, and whether you can do it without legal exposure, it seems like it's a little bit in the realm of hope as opposed to something that can practically occur. What seems more possible to me is that there will be some kind of combination of saying, well, if we are not a fully vaccinated company, then there is this very onerous and expensive schedule of testing that will have to happen 3, 4, 5 times a week. That will be something enforced by the unions, and that it may simply be easier for companies to wait until their entire crew and staff are fully vaccinated before they do come back. When Charlotte St. Martin said that in that interview, she started to speak privately. You know, she said, as a private citizen, I think that not getting vaccinated makes you a fool. But again, it is very difficult when you think about the thousands of people who walk in and out of those buildings. How do you put the burden onto your front of staff saying, don't let anyone in who isn't really vaccinated? I'm not sure that that's going to be practically possible.
My guest is Helen Shaw, theater critic at Vulture. We're talking about theater reopening. There's been a lot of news this week. Listeners, are you planning your first trip back to the theater? Have you bought your tickets already? What are you thinking about? What's the first show you hope to see? Do you have any hesitations about going into theaters at full capacity? Give us a call. 646-435-7280, or tweet to us at @AllOfItWNYC, or send us a DM on Instagram, same handle, @AllOfItWNYC. Let's go to line one, and Jen has called in. Hi, Jen. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you feeling about the theater? How are your friends feeling about the theater?
Okay, so my friends are super excited to have theater back on, and I have a friend in particular, Cheryl, who goes at least a couple of times a week, and I wouldn't join her, and I'd always find an excuse not to go because, you know, it's an investment. It's not cheap, and I would be very selective, but now I'm committing to go with her whenever she wants to go because we've missed it. It's the heartbeat of New York City, and the vitality of Broadway coming back is just such a joy. So I'm going to see everything I have never seen, even though I'm a New Yorker, and I think I'm going to start with Wicked.
Jen, thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate that. So let's follow up on what Jen said. She's going to start with Wicked. Wicked tickets went on sale today. Helen, what are some of the shows that have already been announced?
Well, it is so funny that we're talking today. Today and yesterday was just a staggering flood of announcements. Chicago, Book of Mormon, Wicked, Hamilton, Lion King, Moulin Rouge, Six, all of those sound like they'll be coming back in the first half of September. We have in the latter half of September, we've got Little Shop of Horrors, which is off Broadway, but it has the heartbeat of a Broadway show, coming back on 9/21. Aladdin is selling tickets, although it hasn't been announced, but if you stalk the telecharge accounts as carefully as I do, there are tickets out there to be purchased, so it's possible that that's going to be coming back. So there's just been a flood, as I say, of announcements. Even later in the fall, we're hearing about shows coming back. It sounds like Tina, the Tina Turner musical, is coming back 10/8, October 8th. Ain't Too Proud is coming back on October 16th. And then there's another flood of work, Jagged Little Pill, Phantom of the Opera, Mrs. Doubtfire. It's 3 or 4 seasons packed into one.
I had tickets for 6 for March 18th, 2020.
Oh.
I slightly looked back on my calendar. So I can wait till the fall. I'm a patient woman. Let's go to Sheila online too. Hi, Sheila. Thanks for calling All of It.
Oh, hi. Thanks. I'm thrilled that Broadway's coming back for so many reasons. And like so many other people, my husband and I, we had tickets to see the new iteration of Company with, I can't believe I've forgotten the woman's name who was so marvelous, who's going to star. It's a woman doing the former man's role. Anyway, but Patti LuPone also. And we went online yesterday and we got tickets again.
I'm excited for you. Thank you so much, and have a great night at the theater. We have a question for you, Helen. Cindy is calling in from the West Village on line one. Hi, Cindy. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi. My question was for Helen, if she thinks small neighborhood theaters like the Lucia Lortel, for example, are going to reopen next, and where she thinks the effort should be made in terms of supporting theaters.
So like the smaller theaters, yeah.
Exactly.
So glad you asked.
Versus like a Hamilton or a big show.
It is true that Broadway is the cannonball into the pool. It's the splash that everybody sees. And of course, we know that Broadway is so vital to tourism dollars in New York, and that it is really, it's a vital organ. But for those of us who live here, the theater is already up and running. There are already shows for you to go and see. You don't have to wait until the fall. There is a beautiful production called Taxilandia, which is being produced where you sit in the back seat of a cab and are driven around Bushwick by a great kind of Dante-esque guide. There are shows happening all over the city in Fort Greene. BAM has been organizing one-on-one concerts so that you can have a sort of, world-class level musical experience with a single person. So the shows that are happening now are happening, as you say, at that sort of smaller off-Broadway, off-Broadway level. And they're there to be supported. I don't know about the Lucia Lortel, but it is important, to sign up for every e-blast that you can from those theaters that are close to you and important to you, because already in the latter half of May, PS122 is doing productions, La Mama is doing productions. There is stuff to see in every borough of the theater, and you don't have to look forward to September to go and see them.
Cindy, thank you so much for calling in with that question. I do want to point out, though, there was one show that opened last month that you are not recommending people go see. Blindness at the Daryl Ross. I'm going to read a line and you can explain. I will not recommend that anyone else go to an indoor space to sit with dozens of people for 70 minutes to hear a recording.
Yes.
So, that's a little bit about the content, but also about the setting, it sounds like.
Harsh words. But so it's interesting, a body in a space, especially when you are listening to a recording and you realize that the audience is the show, you think very carefully about what your body is doing in the space. Mm-hmm. So when I saw Blindness, I was not yet vaccinated. And as of this Friday, I will be out of my curing period for my double vaccination. So if I go back to Blindness, which I'm thinking about doing, I think that it might be a completely different experience, because an experience of risking your life to see a show versus seeing something where you know that you are safe, I think that those might just be completely different experiences and therefore different shows. It is, though, a recording. There is no performer in the room with you, and I think for those of us who have been just flipping out waiting for live performance, it's a lot to ask to say come and see this performance, and then it all happens inside your headset.
My guest is Helen Shaw, theater critic at Vulture. We're talking about theater reopening. What about outdoor performances? The weather's getting nice. All the guidance says outdoor, great place to be, safe-ish place to be. What can we expect?
Well, one thing that everyone should look for, because it is close to them, you are probably within 15 feet of an outdoor performance as we speak, is something called open culture, which has been very similar to the open restaurants, open streets initiatives that the city has been behind, the reason why you can, sit in your local parking lane and have a beer. Something similar to that is a permitting process which allows dance productions, musical productions, theatrical productions to happen outdoors in city parks and city streets. So the open culture, again, is something where there's just a constant sort of you know, popcorn of activity happening all over the city. Shakespeare in the Park is going to come back this summer, you know, so you can be sure to, you know, go to the go to the public. And they have productions starting, actually, I think early in June, they will already have shows at their downtown theater. So there is, you know, outdoors is certainly for the person who, like me, is a bit nervous about being indoors just yet. That's the answer.
Obviously, over the past year, we have dealt with the pandemic and we've been talking about all the economic issues. And there are so many people who are going to be going back to work, which is amazing and fantastic. And we're so happy for stagehands and set dressers and everybody. But there's so but the world changed and for in ways that are good. And people are having very open conversations around race and around toxic behavior and backstage. I was following a Twitter thread, a Broadway Twitter thread, and some people were debating, very much people to know about, I'm not so sure I want to go back because I know that person still works on that production. Person X still working on this production. Don't want to say the names and stuff. People can find information. There were more, there was actually more than one, which was, you know, horrifying. What do you see as signs of change in the theater world? What kind of intervention needs to happen so we don't just go back and wind up with the same sort of content about the same kind of people and the same sort of behavior by the same kind of people?
Well, you know, that is, I really pendulum back and forth between optimism and pessimism on, on this. When I am feeling optimistic, like I did this morning at 9 a.m., I was watching an Instagram live presentation by Devon Williams about the Black Theater Matters bill, which he has been presenting to Actors Equity Association about different initiatives that the Actors Union, sorry, Actors and Stage Managers Union can sign onto that would protect the workers in a way that is more profound than the way they have already been protected. You know, equity has always been a very strong union and has cared a lot about its members. But Devon Williams was pointing out the, I think he had something like 13 articles of new measures that could be taken. Things that include EDI measures, include reporting measures for those who are in situations in a company where they don't feel that they can complain within the company. Things that is, are focused on just what you're talking about, sort of expanded safety and expanded access. I think that when I see, I suppose it is empowered labor that I feel most optimistic. Things like Black Theater United, Shelley Williams' project, which has been so focused on building mentorship, building kind of the Rolodex so that we don't see backstages that are all white as we have before. You know, the Broadway Advocacy Coalition, which has been leading workshops with companies in order to, again, expand access, but also awareness. Those are the things I think I feel are most hopeful. I feel least hopeful when I think about how how unchanged the power structure actually is, even after a year and several months. You know, there's only 41 theaters on Broadway, and if you look at who owns them, they all look the same. So there is both a potential here to come back with more grassroots organization and involvement, which will lead to better conditions. But there is, you know, the upper strata power-wise has not ultimately changed. And so I that's when my pendulum swings back toward fear for my field.
I'm curious your thoughts on something that I know is in the works, that the Book of Mormon, which of course has been a huge show for years, there's talk of a potential rewrite, that Matt Stone may go back in and rewrite it because it is clearly problematic content and it's not what it was when it opened, you know, more than a decade ago. Where do you stand on things like that? Is that progress in your opinion?
I think that the thing that is amazing about the theater is that it is plastic. Mm-hmm. It changes night to night, and acknowledging that it can also change week to week, year to year, decade to decade is, I think, actually its strength. Mm-hmm. You can't go back into a film unless, sure. mm-hmm. you know, unless you are Zack Snyder. You can't go back into a film and change it when you think a second time. But the theater is the people who make it. And what I think is most exciting about the Book of Mormon potential for a rewrite is that the call for that came from inside the company. They said, we don't want to perform roles that are like this mm-hmm. anymore, but we love the show. And that idea that we don't have to throw something out, we can change it with love, is, to me, the reason why, you know, I'm such a monomaniac for the performing arts, is because that's actually possible. Passover, which is a beautiful play by Antoinette Nwandu, which is also coming to Broadway this fall, although they have not announced their dates, is a play which is had two different endings so far. When Spike Lee filmed it in its Steppenwolf incarnation in Chicago, it had one ending. Then it came to Lincoln Center, and Nwandu wrote a second ending for it. And now when she brings it to Broadway, she says she's going to write a third and final ending, prioritizing Black joy. And again, watching that play change is part of what is going to make it such a rich part of the culture.
Helen Shaw is Vulture's theater critic, and she's going to be working a lot again. Helen, we're so happy to have you back.
It is a thrill.